I'm not sure I could. They say time heals everything, but I'm still waiting. And I'm through with doubt. There's nothing left for me to figure out. I've paid a price.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Wednesday, the September 12th, 2007 edition of the American Awakening. I am your host, Michael Herzog, and I will be with you for the next 2 hours. Now, as you all know, or some of the new listeners that are coming on, I've had John Hanke on my show Monday and Tuesday. He's going to be with us again today after the first break and again tomorrow and Friday. Now, we didn't get finished with JFK Jr. yesterday, so we're going to continue on with what we were talking about on that saga today. Then we're going to go into 9/11 and reasons behind the events surrounding 9/11. A couple of announcements before I bring John Hanke on. Remember, folks, the stock market is really, really weird. Gold is going up. The dollar is just diving. And I would recommend to you, once again, if you have not already, please give Robbie Noel a call at 800-691-7898. Again, that's 800-691-7898. He will treat you fair. If you have an annuity or any kind of paper, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, you know, cash value in life insurance, equity in your home that you want to refinance and pull out, now is the time to do it, folks. And I'm not telling you this because, you know, I'm selling gold. Robbie's the gold seller. I'm telling you this because I know what's coming. I've seen it. I've been into finance for 20-plus years, and I know what the market's doing. So I implore you to give Robbie a call at 800-691-7898 if you haven't already. A quick note. I wanted to bring up, I got an email. Let's see. What was it? Was it yesterday? From Art Pollock. And it's interesting, you know, the truckers, the Mexican truckers were coming over the border as of, what was it, starting Monday, I believe. And the Americans for Legal Immigration have put major, major pressure on the Senate and Congress regarding this issue. And I'm going to read this really quick for you. It says, Friends of ALIPAC, which is the Americans for Legal Immigration, in another display of the power of American citizens working through groups like ALIPAC and our allied organization, it appears we have stopped the Mexican trucks. The U.S. Senate has voted to pull the funding for the pilot program due to public pressure on the matter. We owe a great deal of thanks to the thousands of you that responded to our email alert calls for action last week, and special thanks to Chris Simcox of the MCDC for working to set up the program. Protests in Nogales crossing in on Arizona or crossing into Arizona on Sunday. So I did not make any announcements for you guys to get on the phone and call your congressmen and senators. Maybe some of you are members of this group. At any rate, it just goes to show you, folks, we are the people, we are the power, and we can make things happen. Now, this is a possibility. This could just be grandstanding. However, at least for the time being, the trucks have stopped. And that's really good news. It's positive. It gives me a good feeling. It shows me the power that we really have. Don't forget my website, www.theamericanawakening.org. Go in there, take a look around. Hopefully you'll buy something. Even if you don't, there's some more stuff coming up there in the near future. And you can just drop me an email saying, you know what, I would buy something if you had something on there that I wanted to buy. That'd make me feel good in itself. And I want to give out John Hanke's website. It's www.bushkilledjfk.com. Want to go in there and take a look around. Remember, you can watch his videos online at my website for free. I would suggest to you folks, if you can, please buy a copy of JFK 2. Buy a copy of JFK Jr. Assassination. He's also got an 18-minute 9/11 video clip that you can buy. You can burn copies of it, pass it out to your friends. Summer's not over yet. You can have a barbecue still. I mean, 4th of July's over with, and it's starting to cool just a little bit. However, at any rate, it's good to get to know your neighbors, and this is a prime reason to do so. You can order the videos, have your neighbors over for a party, get to meet them, introduce yourself, and get to be friends. You know, then that's what this is all about. You know, the New World Order, the powers that be, the oligarchy is always, you know, under the guidelines of divide and conquer. Let's Defeat Him. Now, I should have a break coming up here. I don't hear any music. Carrie, I'm going to skip the break. The computer malfunctioned. Okay, well, I'll tell you what, Carrie, do I have my guest on the line? Is John Hankey on the line yet? Hello, Carrie. Okay. I guess John Hankey is not on the line yet. That is, just a minute, she's calling him now. Okay, so what else have we got here? Let's see, I read that to you. I told you about the gold, and, I did a little research yesterday. You know, for those of you who listened to the show yesterday, we were talking in depth about the actual crash of Kennedy Jr.'s Piper Saratoga. And me being a pilot, I couldn't help it because it's just a part of me. You know, I'm like a dog with a bone. I start going down and looking at details. And John and I were speaking yesterday about the crash itself and the fact that it was reported that the Piper Saratoga that John was flying, which is a 1995 Piper Saratoga II, crashed at a speed of 200 miles an hour. And I want to bring that up today. I want to talk to John Hankey about that because I happened to notice in looking at the statistics on that particular airplane that it's a high-performance turbo airplane, and that makes a difference. And I'm going to get into this with John Hankey when I get him up online here, and we're going to talk about that because there's specific things that must be done with a pilot that is on an approach to an airfield if he is piloting a turbo airplane, because the approach is different with a turbo than it is with a regular piston engine airplane. And this is what I want to get into with John. So, John, are you with me?
Hello.
Hello, John. Hey,
yes,
John, how you doing today?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. You know, I was just telling my listeners that me being a pilot, and also when I get this information, I'm kind of like a dog with a bone. And you had mentioned that the airplane, John Jr.'s airplane, hit at 200 miles an hour, right?
Yes. That's where the needles were pegged when they
right.
recovered their
Right. Okay. Now, I want to ask you a couple questions here, so bear with me. Remind me, how far out from the airport was John when he went down?
I believe it was about 14 miles.
14 miles. Okay. I did a little research on that particular airplane last night, John.
Uh-huh.
And that airplane is a turbo Saratoga. It's a 300-horsepower turbo Saratoga. And if John Jr. was 14 miles out from the airport when his plane went down, he was not cruising at anywhere near 200 miles an hour going straight. I'll tell you that, because with a turboprop or a turbo aircraft, there's a manifold pressure gauge, and what you have to do is you have to gauge how far you are out from the airport, and you have to start backing off 1 inch about every 3 miles towards your approach to the airport. And what that does is it cools down your turbo, and what you want to do is you want to time it so when you get into the traffic control pattern, that your manifold pressure is backed off. And what it does is it cools the turbo down so the oil doesn't gunk up and ruin your turbo. So I'm estimating if he was 14 miles out, he was probably doing about 110 miles an hour. Now, if somebody pressed on the yoke, he was at 2,500 feet, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
That's right.
If somebody pressed on the yoke at 2,500 feet and forced the airplane down at 20. I'm not a physicist, okay, but at 110 miles an hour, I would assume in order for it to make 200 miles an hour by the time it hit, they also would have had to have pushed the throttle in.
You know, I haven't looked at this stuff in a while, but my recollection is that the motor was also going full bore.
Okay, well, that's what they did then, because if he was on an approach, just being, you know, the competent pilot that I'm sure that he was, I know he was, I didn't know him personally, but he would have been backing off 1 inch on that manifold pressure every 3 miles, starting from about probably 30 to 35 miles out from the airport. But now, before we get into what we want to talk about today, and I know we want to do some more on JFK Jr., I've got a caller on the line. I have not opened up the phone lines, and he wants to talk about the trucks. So I'm going to bring him up just for a minute, and then we're going to go into what we're going into today, John. So stick with me just a second, okay?
Okay, sure.
Let's go to Richard in Alabama. Richard, you're on with Michael and John. Go ahead.
I just talked to a staffer for Senator Jeff Sessions, and she mm-hmm. said the vote is not binding. The trucks continue to roll. It's just a non-binding vote.
So it's just grandstanding.
Yeah.
It's basically what it is the senator's saying, well, we just want to show you we don't like this, but nothing's going to happen with it. Well, I mentioned that earlier, and I thank you for the call, Richard, because, you know, it looked really good on the surface, but the way these guys go, you know what they do in there. There's a lot of times they'll voice their opposition to it, but it's just for show. And evidently that's what it is again. I appreciate the call, Richard. Thank you so much. Okay?
Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Okay, John. Yeah, let's get back to JFK here. Okay, so where are we going now? The saga continues. Where we left off yesterday.
Yeah, I wanted to I wanted to talk a little bit about what a great time, what a great experience I had yesterday. I thought that it was really, really something. That is to say, I thought that it was representative of what the best of what you get at a college. And a college means that you bring a bunch of colleagues together, right? A meeting of equals, and you exchange ideas, and you go back and forth, and that in the process of doing that, you develop things. And I thought that was just a fabulous example of what transpired. I was under the impression, Michael, that coming in, you were not altogether dissuaded or persuaded one way or the other about whether there was a bomb or not, but then we got into this discussion, and out of the blue, with the issue of terminal velocity comes up, and the fact that the needle on the airspeed gauge of the plane was pegged at right smashed into position when it hit the water at 200 miles an hour, and that turns out to be very, very powerful evidence that the plane was intact, because if it hadn't been intact, it wouldn't have been able to achieve that sort of speed. And
that's true. And also, let me interject, and also because of the fact that and I didn't know this until last night, John, also by virtue of the fact that he had a turbo, and I know the approximate speed he would have been doing at 14 miles out, whoever forced that yoke down forced the throttle all the way in.
Right. Well, and we know that anyhow because, well, if we can trust the NTSB report at all, the NTSB report also says that if I'm not mistaken, that the RPM was at maximum and that the throttle was open.
Mm-hmm.
But just in this, the benefit that you get by having a wide open discussion, I was going through the various pieces of evidence that indicate that the 15.5 hour delay was just an outrage. And one of the things that I brought up was the emergency locator transmitter and the fact that, according to ABC News, they had information that the transmitter had gone off. In addition to which, the transmitter was recovered and it was examined, and the battery was found worn down, which also suggests that the emergency locator transmitter went off. And I was just about to have that discussion. I was intending to have that discussion, but we took a caller and we ended up talking about the bomb, and so we went on for some time talking about the bomb, and then I had to come back to discuss the transmitter, and I'd never linked those two before in my head. But then we had this discussion that if there was a bomb on the plane, it had to have been in the tail, and if it were in the tail, it would have presumably obliterated the emergency locator transmitter, which is also in the tail, and it didn't obliterate the emergency locator transmitter. It transmitted, it was recovered, it was tested, and mm-hmm. there was no indication on any side that there was anything wrong with it. So that's another very, very
right.
powerful, I think, indication that there was not a bomb in the plane. But it came out of this interaction.
And so we can conclude by that, John, correct me if I'm wrong, but we can conclude by that if there was a bomb in the plane, number one, it would probably blow the tail off, which means that even if the yoke were forced down, the plane would still flutter because it would be out of control. Okay, and so for it to hit at 200 miles an hour, that means that the throttle was pushed full in. There wasn't a bomb that went off in the back of the plane, because if there was, nobody would have the control to force it down, and it would have crashed at about 120 miles an hour in separate pieces.
Right, and then we took also this call from Malcolm, and Malcolm mm-hmm. pointed out that there was this report that these little tiny bits and pieces washed up on the Gayhead Beach, and it's always remarkable to me. I used to coach debate, and it's my favorite thing when somebody brings in a piece of evidence in order to prove one point, and then it ends up getting flipped and turns out to be a much more powerful piece of evidence on the other side. That when the plane hit the water at 200 miles an hour, it shattered and broke into many, many little pieces. So the notion that these little pieces would wash up on the beach is not surprising or an indication by any means that there was a bomb, but in fact that all of these little pieces washed up on the same beach is a very powerful indication that there wasn't a bomb, because if those little pieces had been generated 1,500 feet in the air, the wind would have scattered them all over the place, and they would have washed up in Massachusetts and Rhode Island and Connecticut and many other places, and they didn't. They all washed up just on this on a fairly tight area of one of the beaches on Martha's Vineyard. So I guess the point that I wanted to make is how much, what a great experience I had yesterday, and how I really think that this sort of open discussion where you bring people in and bring stuff in from all sides is just really, really helpful in the situation that we are, and invariably are, I think, you know, with 9/11 and any other major crime, where you don't have all the pieces in hand, and you have to try to figure out what these pieces mean, and people... People who are studying it go back and forth, and they offer ideas, and that's what science is about. I mean, probably your listeners don't know that Galileo said that the planets go around the sun, but he also said that they went around the sun in circular orbits, and the church fathers were able to then attack him and say, well, no, see, the movement of the planets is not predicted by the plan that you present. None of it can be true. And then it was Kepler who came up, but in the exchange of ideas with Galileo, came up and said, no, they're not circular, they're elliptical orbits. But it's this sort of exchange, particularly it's scientific method to do this, right, to take the bits and pieces and to juggle them around and to throw them back and forth between different minds in order to try to get us somewhere. That's
right.
And, well, so taking that and dovetailing off of that and this, so we're trying to take a scientific approach. And that's what science does. And Einstein is the guy who said, but I'm sure he had several other people. We could find several other people who said similar things. Einstein said that the most important thing is to ask the right questions. And I'm going to remind everybody of a question that I've raised the last 2 days now, and this will be the third, that I think a really essential question is the question of why Prescott Bush would force his son, George Herbert Walker Bush, to be so closely involved in the Kennedy assassination that he gets named by J. Edgar Hoover in a memo that I think very clearly implicates him in the assassination of President Kennedy. The title of the memo was Assassination of President Kennedy. He's identified as a CIA agent supervising the people that Robert Kennedy immediately identified as having been involved in the assassination, and that Marita Lorenz and E. Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis and a number of other people have identified as being involved in the assassination. Why wasn't George given a much more high-level position? Why was he put so close to the fire that he ended up getting burned? And I'm very interested to hear what other people, what other answers people have to that question. I mean, I have mine. And as I was framing this, I think it was last night, I was trying to put together these thoughts. And it struck me, right, that the question I'm asking is, why did he put him so close to the fire? And in the books on the Bohemian Grove, people talk about the giant owl. Giant owl, and that they have a fire. And then they talk about, there's references in the Bible to the god, or to the idol, Moloch, M-O-L-O-C-H, which is, you know, it's spelled in Sumerian crypt. Graphic, so it's, you know, the question of how you spell it is entirely up in the air. But the point is that in the Bible there's these references that those cultures that honored the god Moloch or worshiped the god Moloch or whatever, that several references in the Bible that they put their children in the fire. And you know, that's not my favorite explanation, but it's curious to me that that you have there, so there's an explanation. My favorite one is that the mafia, if you want to join the mafia, if you want to be a made man in the mafia, you have to commit a murder so that they can trust you, because they know that they can blackmail you if you try to blackmail them. And George H.W. Bush's political career began very demonstrably with the Kennedy assassination. If you just look in his autobiography and in the open public records, his run for Senate began.
Got to take a break, buddy. Got to take a break. We'll be back in three. Hold that thought. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening, with my guest, John Hanke. Be right back. We got more.
Have you heard of a privacy crisis? Odds are you're already immersed in one. The U.S. government is now legally tapping phones, monitoring emails, tracking purchases, and seizing property in record numbers. Banks are demanding invasive personal information for even the smallest transaction. Unfortunately, stalkers looking to harm you or your financial situation are using the same methods. So how can you protect yourself, your loved ones, and all that you own? Well, the first step is to purchase the most important how-to book you'll ever read. It's called Privacy Crisis by author Grant Hall. In minutes, you'll know the methods he himself has used and advised others about in order to bank anonymously, open a safety deposit box without a social security number. With Privacy Crisis, you'll discover how to avoid judgments, seal your credit files airtight, drop off the radar, and virtually disappear from those looking to cause you injury. The ebook and hardcover versions are available at www.privacycrisis.com. Grant Hall's Privacy Crisis contains information and legal methods the powers that be don't want you to know. Travel, bank, work, and live anonymously, live free. You can also order Privacy Crisis by telephone. Call 702-433-6222.
Eating a well-balanced diet filled with whole foods is sometimes hard to achieve, so supplementation can be beneficial. But WholeFoodToday.com believes that if you want to supplement, you should be doing so with products made from complex and natural whole foods, which the body can recognize and utilize as food, rather than with synthetic formulas of isolated vitamins made in chemical factories. Whole Food Today is dedicated to bringing you the finest health products at an incredible value. Nutrient formulas for men and women, super green food formulas made from over 30 vegetables, legumes, sprouts, immunity health formulas, coconut oil, krill oil, and many other products made 100% naturally. Visit us today at www.wholefoodtoday.com or call 1-800-989-9840. That's www.wholefoodtoday.com. Or call 1-800-989-9840. Whole Food Today offers free shipping to all orders anywhere in the continental U.S. Whole Food Today, empowering people to attain and maintain extraordinary health.
Listening to RBN has helped you to prepare for an emergency and invest in the gold and silver markets, but now you'd like help managing your other investments. Would you prefer personalized investment advice? Onesti Investment Advisors can help. Onesti Investment Advisors will customize a portfolio with no conflicts of interest. Onesti Investment Advisors is a fee-based firm. We do no underwriting and receive no commission, so we always look after your interest. The better you do, the better we do. Get diversification by investing in stocks, bonds, mutual funds, ETFs, and more. Onesti Investment Advisors can help fund education, plan for retirement, lower your taxes, increase retirement income, and protect against a falling dollar. You've worked hard for your assets. Former floor trader and certified financial planner certificate, John Onesti, has the experience to help grow your investments. If you're looking to improve your investment results, call or email for a free consultation. Onesti Investment Advisors, 505-296-2453. That's 505-296-2453. Click on our banner ad on RBN or visit our website at onestiadvisors.com. Onesti Investment Advisors, looking after your investments.
All right, we're back. Michael Herzog of the American Awakening. Short segment coming up here to the bottom of the hour with my guest John Hanke, talking about JFK Jr. assassination and concluding on this, and then we're going to go into 9/11. I'll tell you what, John, are you aware that you're carrying Moloch around in your pocket?
No, I'm not.
Well, take out a dollar bill. You've got a dollar bill in your pocket.
No,
look
I
at
don't.
The front.
Okay.
You don't. Oh, okay. Well, then you're not carrying it around. But curiously enough, they've got an owl peeking out of right up in the right-hand corner, the number one on the dollar bill, you know, where there's a there's kind of a pattern around, around the one. But right on the left-hand side of that pattern, there's a little owl's head peeking out there. If you take a magnifying glass and look at it, that's just one of the Illuminati signs that they put on our money. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry. I just thought I'd throw that out there.
That's okay.
So don't carry any dollars around with you.
I didn't really mean to focus on that. But, you know, it's one explanation. I don't think it's the best explanation. I don't think it's the most important explanation. But it may have a bit of truth to it. But I wanted to get back to the question that I tried to leave people with yesterday, which was focusing on this issue of a flight instructor. And now the question was, why, if the people who reported the plane missing, Carol Radziwill, reported that there was a flight instructor on the plane, if the last person that John spoke to about flying, which was his editor, Richard Blow, if he told his editor that he was taking a flight instructor on the plane, if John had always flown with a flight instructor, if he needed one because of his injured foot, if he needed one because he was trying to log hours in order to get his instrument license, if he needed one because he didn't have a license to fly in heavy haze, and there had been heavy haze the last three times that he had flown, And in fact, five of the last eight times that he had flown, he had flown in fog that was so heavy he had to fly an instrument. So he would have been required by the FAA regulations to be carrying a flight instructor. Why would he not have had, I'm sorry, given all of that evidence that he had a flight instructor on the plane, and given that nobody saw the plane take off, there were no witnesses to the takeoff, how is it that the media at about 1:30 in the afternoon suddenly, or I mean, actually it's closer to 11:30, suddenly yanked the story that there was a flight instructor on the plane, that the story that they had been putting out reasonably, because they got the story that the plane was missing from the Coast Guard, and when they got it from the Coast Guard, they got the whole story that the Coast Guard received, which was that there was also naming the people on the plane, including the flight instructor. How is it that suddenly at 11:30 in the morning, that story gets yanked and it gets replaced with a story that there was no flight instructor? There was and is no evidence for anybody to make a definitive statement or even a suggestive statement that there was not a flight instructor on the plane.
Well, let me stop you for a minute.
Sure.
I'm going to tell you something very interesting about this whole thing, because you're saying that the media was reporting a flight instructor, then they're not reporting there was no flight instructor. And what I find really curious about this is whether you are a VFR pilot or whether you're an IFR pilot, and John was VFR, and John was a very meticulous pilot. I was a very meticulous pilot. I still am. I'm not current. But the thing is, when you go somewhere, when you fly from point A to point B, you file a written flight plan. Okay. Now, are they saying that he did not file a flight plan? Because if he filed a written flight plan, the amount of occupants in the airplane would have been depicted in that flight plan.
Which is why it's missing. They say that he didn't file a flight plan. And, right, a careless pilot would file a flight plan, and John was a meticulous pilot. A careless pilot would contact air traffic control. Filing a flight plan and contacting the air traffic facilities along the route of your flight is the two most, you tell me. I would suggest that they are the two most basic procedures that any pilot would follow, and the flight instructors, John's flight instructors that I spoke with, were incredulous. They couldn't believe that the FAA and the Air Force were saying that John hadn't filed a flight plan and had not contacted, according to the Pentagon, any of the air traffic control facilities along the route.
And I don't believe that for a minute.
You've just pointed out why they had to yank and destroy the flight plan and claim it was never filed. They had to do that because it would have listed the presence of the flight instructor. And the reason that they had to claim that he never contacted any of the air traffic control facilities is because then he would have, they would have given him a code to put into his transponder, so that they would have set off an alarm at FAA when the plane dipped below 100 feet. So they would have known the location and the fact that the plane was in trouble before the plane hit the water. So they had to yank both of those pieces of information, but in doing so, they certainly made the hair stand up on the back of the necks of every flight instructor that John had ever encountered, because all of them, without being asked to volunteer the information, said that he was a very, very meticulous pilot. But in any case, I want people to focus on this notion that this story drops out of the sky. It comes from nowhere, and it is used to revoke the story that had been provided by the most reliable witnesses, right? Carol Radziwill was the last one that we know of to speak to anybody on that plane, and she told the Coast Guard that there was a flight instructor on the plane. Then what would be the basis for retracting that story? So keep that one in mind, and then let me give you another one to compare it to, which is in the murder of John Kennedy Sr., we have a similar situation, which is that a story goes out over the Dallas police radio that very shortly after the assassination, that describes the assailant as being, I think, 5'8", and wearing a light tan jacket, and I forget how many pounds. Anyway, the point is that a description goes out over Dallas police radio. That description is used to arrest Oswald, but nobody had seen any alleged assassin. And the description that went out was the description that was in Oswald's FBI file. We'll come back.
Okay.
We'll talk about the significance.
You're learning. Okay, Michael Herzog with my guest, John Hanke. We'll be back in three with more. Stick with us, folks. Got a lot more to cover.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. because you can handle the truth.
The Berkeelite's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkeelite, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkeelite is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkeelite, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
Hi, this is Brother Michael Diamond. You can now get the most important package ever on what has happened to the Catholic Church in the last 50 years. Find out how this massive crisis concerning the Catholic Church happened, what happened, and how the Bible predicted it would take place in the last days. The package contains 6 DVDs that contain 10 different programs, 2 books that combined are over 1,000 pages and other information. Order now at our website, mostholyfamilymonastery.com. That's mostholyfamilymonastery.com. The last word monastery is spelled M-O-N-A-S-T-E-R-Y. Or call us at 1-800-275-1126. That's 1-800-275-1126. Or mail in your order to us at 4425 Schneider Road, Fillmore, New York, 14735. The total cost for this massive package of information is only $10, $15 for UPS Ground, or $30 outside the U.S.
Today's energy infrastructure is antiquated and fails to meet the needs and demands of its customers. Our Renewable Energy Solar Program is the first to give you the opportunity to adopt green energy in your home without having to make a huge investment. Our Renewable Energy Solar System converts sunlight directly into usable electricity where utility power and net metering are available. Our grid-connected solar electric system is designed to produce 100% of the energy consumed by you throughout the year that is allowed by net metering laws. It's finally affordable to go solar. There's no system to purchase, no installation costs, no maintenance fees, no permanent hassles, no performance worries, and no rate increases. Reserve your system today. Call 866-276-3975. That's 866-276-3975. Or click on the web banner at RBN. Rethink solar and join the solution. Together, we can make a difference.
We're back. Come a little bit closer and hear what John Hanke has to say about the JFK Jr. plane crash. I want to give out his website. It's www.bushkilledjfk.com. And also mine is www.theamericanawakening.org. Okay, John, let's get back to it. Go ahead. You got
the
floor.
So we're examining this question of the story that suddenly went out in the face of all of this mass of evidence. The story went out based upon nothing. That there was a flight instructor on, that there was no flight instructor on the plane. And so we're examining that, and I was suggesting that a useful comparison is to look at the story that a description of Oswald went out over the Dallas police radio when there was no source for that story. To this day, there's no source for the description of Oswald that went out over the Dallas police radio. Nobody had seen him. I think Peter Dale Scott, if people are familiar, he's a terrific researcher. I heard him speak, and he pointed out that Oswald was, I believe, in fact, 5'11", but the police, the report, the description that went out said he was said the shooter was 5'8". Well, that's what it says in Oswald's FBI file. So the description that went out over the police radio just happened to match Oswald's FBI file. In any case, Oswald was arrested based on that description, right? Somebody saw... well, this is the story that they tell, that there was a guy standing in a shoe store who saw Oswald walk by and saw him walk into a theater without paying for a ticket. And this guy went and grabbed the woman who sold the tickets and said, a guy just walked into your theater who matches the description. Let's call the police. Anyhow, looking at that carefully, it proves that there was a conspiracy, right? It proves that Oswald was set up. It proves that the members of this conspiracy had access to the Dallas police radio so that they weren't the mafia and they weren't the Cubans and they weren't the Russians and they weren't just Joe Blow walking down the street. They were somebody who had connections to get them onto the inside. And I think that we can then go back and look at this story of John, write the report that's without any basis, in fact, whatsoever. I mean, there's not even any bad information, right? There aren't any bad reports coming out from any source saying that there was no flight instructor on the plane. Where did this come from, and what can we make out of it? And I think that we can make out of it very clearly that there was a flight instructor on the plane. Well, certainly we can draw the conclusion that they want us to think that there was no flight instructor on the plane. And so, all right, we'll take that step. Clearly, there's no argument there. They want us to think there was no flight instructor on the plane. Why would they want us to think that? And it seems to me the obvious conclusion is that, well, there must have been a flight instructor on the plane, and it must have something to do with the murder. But in any case, I don't know that I had that sort of stuff clarified in my mind. All that I knew was that there was all of this wealth of enormously suspicious inactivity, the standing down of the FAA and the Air Force in the search and rescue that went on, that continued for 15 and a half hours. There was that you could look at and see. I went into this thing looking through the NTSB report and looking through all of the newspaper articles and looking at all of the witnesses and calling up everybody that I could think of. And I'm looking for evidence of a bomb would be the most obvious, but I'm looking for evidence of anything, of how that plane was brought down, and I'm finding nothing.
Well, I tell you, there's some very high-level official or high-level military, John, that has went in and instructed the FAA to lose any evidence regarding the flight plan. And
They yanked that. I'm sure they yanked that before the...
But there's got to be somebody in the FAA somewhere who has been told to shut up, don't ever talk about it. And well, I would love to hear that person come forth. Go ahead.
Well, if and when we get to the question of why they killed John Kennedy... I think that one of the junior, why they killed John Kennedy Jr., I think that one of the things that you can point to is that this was a dry run for 9/11, right? If you're getting ready to pull off an operation like 9/11, you have to identify that there are people in the FAA and the Air Force who are trustworthy, right? So let's give them a dry run, or let's give them a wet run. Let's give them a smaller, similar operation where they have to stand down, and then they have to lose all of the evidence about why it was that they stood down. And so on. And so I think that this may have been a warm-up for 9/11, and I think the individuals involved may have been found themselves in critical positions on September 11th. In any case, I'm struggling with this stuff, right? There's this evidence that there was a murder. There's no evidence of how it was done. There's this crazy stuff about a flight instructor, but I didn't have a clue about what that was about. And I'm looking through the... NTSB report, 500 pages, and on page 350, I believe, I come on this one line that says that the fuel valve was recovered and that it was found in the off position. Now, and I didn't know what that means, and so I started calling up, I opened up the yellow pages and I looked under flight instructors and I started making phone calls to people and looking for guys who were sitting around with nothing to do and who were interested in, and, you know, obviously their flight instructors are going to be considerably more knowledgeable than I am, to discuss this particular thing and discuss what the significance of it was. And one of the things that all of them told me is that the purpose of the flight instructor is twofold. One is to, you have tanks in both wings and you switch back and forth as the gasoline goes down, and that way you maintain the balance of the plane. You don't have one wing completely filled with gasoline and the other one empty, so that you have, you know, 300 pounds more weight on one side than the other. So you go back and forth to keep them balanced, but why would it be in the off position? And there's a couple of things about the off position, and one of them is that you can't get there by accident. that you can't get there with one hand, that you have to push. There's a keeper. I don't know what your water heater has a similar thing. That if
there's
ever,
a safety switch. Yeah, there's a safety switch, right.
That you have to push down as you're turning it so that you don't accidentally on your water heater, so that you don't accidentally turn, you know, have a flood of gas coming out when the pilot isn't lit. And, right, so there's a safety. So you have to do it with two hands. You can't do it by accident. So John didn't accidentally turn his fuel valve to the off position. That's one. But the only reason that you would turn the fuel valve to the off position, from what I understood from my discussions with these people, is that if your engine is on fire, right, if you're at 5,000 feet and your engine catches on fire, you're going to burn up unless you can do something about it. And if you can cut off the supply of gasoline to the engine, there's a good chance that the fire will burn itself out and you'll be, right, the motor will, of course, die, but then you just glide and you glide and you glide until the fire goes out, and then you could start the engine back up. Perhaps. In any case, you can get on the radio and arrange to get picked up. But if you manage to start the engine up, then you can go where you want to go. And certainly this is not something that would have caused anybody to crash, because if you accidentally turned the fuel control valve off, you just turn it back on and start the plane up again. The plane's not going to crash because the engine died. It will continue to glide. I forget how long we discussed yesterday, but for several minutes. Mm-hmm. At least
In about 500 to 600 feet a minute it would lose.
Right, and so at 1,500 feet, at least 3 minutes, he's going to be up in the air. So I get this information from these guys, and I don't feel like I'm very much closer to knowing anything. In fact, maybe now that I have this information under my belt and feel like there was an answer in this fuel valve, I would have found it, and it wasn't there. But so I'm talking to another flight instructor, and he says, well, you know, that it's a funny thing about fuel valves. We're bemoaning the fact that we haven't figured anything out. He says, it's a funny thing about fuel valves. Egypt Air 990, he says, the pilot turned the fuel valve to the off position. And I said, what? And it reminded me, and this is quite a few years now, and I don't know how many of your listeners will recall, but...
I'm familiar with it.
I think it's either 2 months before or 2 months after John Kennedy's plane crashed, there was an Egypt Air 990 plane that was full of Egyptian military people, and it took off out of New York, out of the airport in New York, and it flew to nearly 50 miles to within this position where John Kennedy's plane went down, but I don't think that's of any particular significance necessarily. And then one of the pilots said, Allah help me, or something, you know, fairly innocuous. There was nothing particular, but it was an invocation for help. And he then grabbed the yoke and forced the plane to go straight down. And it's interesting that the Egyptian Pilots Association said that this was a lie. This guy was straight and narrow, and he was happily married, and he was not suicidal, and everything was going well for him in his life. This would never have happened. There must have been a bomb in the tail, because that's what the plane did. It acted as if there were a bomb in the tail, and it went straight down. However, you know, there was no evidence that when the thing was over that there was a bomb in the tail. And in the report, they said, and somehow that this had come to the attention of this particular flight instructor, the guy pushed the yoke forward, and the plane went shooting straight down. And there's a bunch of other pilots standing around, and they grabbed him, and they pulled him away, and they're struggling to get the plane to recover. And this guy turns around and cuts the engine off to he cuts the fuel off to the engines, and the engines die. And now it's not possible to recover the plane, and it continues on into the water. Anyhow, that particular, right, the guy told me this, but I was able to verify it from NTSB records and letters. They wrote a letter to, the NTSB wrote a letter to McDonnell Douglas, I think was the manufacturer, and discussing the slight delay. I think there was maybe a half a second delay between when the guy cut the engine off, cut the fuel off, and the time that the engines died. But the point is that it's documented. And so, all right, well, how does that help you? Well, one of the things that it does is it associates turning the fuel control valve off with a suicide. And But I didn't put those two things together yet. That is the issue of the flight instructor, and this may be easier for your audience to do now because they've been sort of set up. But in fact, I called one of my old high school teachers, and he wasn't there, and I'm leaving a message on his answering machine telling him my predicament. I don't know what to think about this. And while I'm leaving the message, the light goes off in my head. The flight instructor committed suicide, just like the pilot on Egypt Air 990. But we now should be suspicious about this flight instructor, right? This is a guy whose presence on the plane has been hidden, and who we conclude is would have been there. But now we can start tying a whole lot of other things together. His body was not recovered, but what was the purpose of the 15 and a half hour delay, right? Why did they do this outrageous thing, right? I mean, I mentioned earlier that the reporters questioning the Pentagon spokesperson about
the lieutenant colonel, yes.
Go ahead. Lieutenant Colonel Steve Rourke. What caused the delay, they want to know. Don't you have the radar in your hand that we have in our hands showing where the plane went down and you're not searching that area? Why not? What was the purpose of that? Why was there such a provocation? They provoked the news people, and of course, just outrageous provocation of the Kennedy family. And I think that we can now start to put the pieces together and say that the only explanation that makes any sense is clearly there was it's powerful evidence that there was a flight instructor on the plane. And certainly they don't want us to think that there was, and so we make that leap and say, well, if they don't want us to think there was, there must have been. And what's also very, very clear, looking at the radar and that the way that that plane went straight down in clear skies, the NTSB did not find any mechanical malfunctions. Now, there which is another reason to say, gee, the NTSB report is contains incriminating information. It seems to me it would have been much easier if the killers could have penetrated the NTSB and got the NTSB to say, oh, the plane failed. See, this thing happened to the plane that, is predictable and clearly accidental. The NTSB didn't say that. They said that there was no evidence of any malfunction on the plane. Well, the plane went straight down. It looks, if there wasn't a bomb in the tail, it looks like it must have been a suicide. And in fact, we have a very parallel story with Egypt Air 990 to indicate that the fuel valve being in the off position seems to be a very, very powerful suggestion that there was in fact a suicide on the plane.
Well, let me interject, John.
Sure, please.
You know what comes to mind with me is MK Ultra, Montauk experience, if you will. I mean, John David Chapman, John Hinckley, Sirhan Sirhan, all of these people, you know, there's strong evidence to conclude that these people were mind control. What was it? It was Chapman, I believe, that shot Reagan.
It's Hinckley who shot Reagan.
Chapman shot Lennon. Right.
Oh, Lennon, yeah. Right. Who shot Wallace?
I don't know.
But there's a string of them.
Yeah, right. There's a string of them, and it's all politically involved. You know, Nixon was very concerned about John Lennon. George H.W. Bush had illusions of grandeur, and he wanted to be president. And there's a lot of questions about he was controlling or he was, you know, making the decisions for the presidency while Reagan was in office. And when Reagan was in the hospital, we're not so sure that he wasn't tampering with Reagan or somebody wasn't tampering with Reagan's mind. And then we've got Sirhan Sirhan, who swears to this day that he has no recollection of shooting anybody. I believe that correct me if I'm wrong, but the autopsy on Robert Kennedy, the doctor that performed the autopsy said that those bullets were fired from about 1 inch or less to his head, and Sirhan Sirhan was about 6 feet away from him.
Thomas Noguchi, who they then spent the next 10 years trying to fire for having made that remark. But yes, the coroner in Los Angeles announced that Robert Kennedy had powder burns, and that the shot was on the back of his head, and that the shot was from 1 to 3 inches. And right, and then you have 20 witnesses in the room, including the guy who grabbed Sirhan, who said that he certainly didn't get within 2 feet.
Right.
Nobody should be surprised at the notion that a Manchurian candidate might have been put onto the plane, and so let me start tying some of that together.
Well, there's only one other conclusion, and that is that JFK Jr. committed suicide, and I don't buy that one, so go ahead.
That's right. I mean, maybe he was depressed about his money or his beautiful wife or his successful magazine or his good looks. I'm not sure which of those might have drove him over the edge. But anyhow,
Now we got a break coming up in about a minute, so go ahead.
Okay, well, let me take a breath. So we're trying to put the... Right, you want to investigate Manchurian candidates. I suggest that you... I recommend that you... go and see a professional hypnotist, and in one of the big cities, that's not a problem. You just Google it, and you'll find, I'm sure that this week there's someone performing in Los Angeles, but I took my daughter and we went, and we watched, and he invited people up onto the stage, and 20 people went up, and 5 people went under. So you can see that 1/5 to 1/4 of the population is readily susceptible to hypnotism. The CIA investigated it for 30 years at, I think it was Stanford, maybe it was Berkeley, and they, according to them, they didn't find out anything. And the one thing that they needed to find out was, how do you put somebody under who is not readily susceptible? So they had to develop the drug cocktail that you could give to a normally unsusceptible individual in order to be able to put them under. And that's all that they had to do, because watching these people on the stage, you can get anybody to do anything. Now, you can't get them to do something that they think is evil, but you have to describe it in terms that are not evil. And so maybe we'll leave people hanging and we'll come back for the break. How do you get somebody to turn off the fuel control valve? It becomes an obvious answer. How do you get somebody to turn the fuel control valve and then plunge the plane into the sea? And how do you get them to see that as not being an evil thing, but in fact a good thing to do? We'll have that when we come back.
All right. Yeah, we're going to a break. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening, coming to you live from Phoenix, Arizona, with my guest, John Hankey. Stick with us. We've got a lot more, folks. Be right back.
The ideology powering the Democrats and Republicans is not liberalism or conservatism, but globalism. Globalists are concerned with what's good for big business and the American empire instead of what's fair for the American people. The only antidote to the poison of globalism is nationalism. Start reading the Nationalist Times each month. The Nationalist Times promotes a common sense, intelligent, and passionate alternative to the reigning party line. Published monthly since 1985, the Nationalist Times is a 20-page newspaper featuring outstanding writers and columnists who don't believe in taboos or sacred cows. Be one of the many thousands of loyal readers of the Nationalist Times. Subscribe now to the Nationalist Times. Just $19 for 1 year. That's 50% off the regular price. Send your $19 subscription to the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. That's the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. Or subscribe online at our website, www.anu.org.
Listening to RBN has helped you to prepare for an emergency and invest in the gold and silver markets, but now you'd like help managing your other investments. Would you prefer personalized investment advice? Onesti Investment Advisors can help. Onesti Investment Advisors will customize a portfolio with no conflicts of interest. Onesti Investment Advisors is a fee-based firm. We do no underwriting and receive no commission, so we always look after your interest. The better you do, the better we do. Get diversification by investing in stocks, bonds, mutual funds, ETFs, and more. Onesti Investment Advisors can help fund education, plan for retirement, lower your taxes, increase retirement income, and protect against a falling dollar. You've worked hard for your assets. Former floor trader and certified financial planner certificate, John Onesti has the experience to help grow your investments. If you're looking to improve your investment results, call or email for a free consultation. Onesti Investment Advisors, 505-296-2453. That's 505-296-2453. Click on our banner ad on RBN or visit our website at onestiadvisors.com. Onesti Investment Advisors, looking after your investments.
The Berkey Light's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkey Light, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in
making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkey Light is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkey Light, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
All right, we're back. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening, coming to you live from Phoenix, Arizona. A short segment coming up to the top of the hour. Before I get back to my guests, I want to give a shout-out. I just got an email from a good friend of mine, John. I want to thank you, John. You just answered a question for me, and I'll talk to you later. So back on topic here. Listen, we've got a few minutes going up to the top of the hour, John, and we've got Alan from Texas on the line. I haven't opened up the phone lines yet, but let's go ahead and take a call from Alan, okay?
Sure.
Alan, hey, Alan, you're on with Michael and John.
Hi, guys. You were looking for the guy who shot Wallace, Arthur Bremer.
Oh, right.
All right.
He was another lone nut.
He was another lone nut who kept the diary.
And, within hours of the shooting, we had a complete background of his whole life.
Well, and he kept a diary. Like all of the rest of them, he kept a diary. Now, I don't know how many people you know who keep a diary, but I don't, and I don't know anybody who does. But these guys all did. And, I think they all had The Catcher in the Rye on their bookshelf, which is, to me, that's plausibly a coincidence, but... the notion that they all kept diaries that were written for them is much more extraordinary. I mean, given that it's all of them, right? And I don't, you know, take the afternoon off and go walking up and down the street and find out, hitting on people randomly who keeps a diary and see what the odds are then that five assassins out of five people would keep a diary.
Aren't my listeners great, John?
I
mean,
yes,
you know, we need
good.
Something answered, and boom, right on target. Here comes Alan from Texas with our answer. Thank you so much, Alan.
Hey,
I appreciate that.
One other point, though. I just got an email from a friend of mine in England, and he said that the news about the Bin Laden family leaving shortly, what was it, within 3, 4, 5 days after 9/11.
Right, when they closed down all the flights.
Right. Yeah, he said that was actually very well publicized there on all the networks, and was curious as to why we had very little coverage of it here. Of course, I didn't learn about that for quite a while until I really started getting into 9/11 information. Did you have any insight into that?
Well, it's just the obvious one that if you watch BBC News, the BBC will tell you things about events that impact the reputation of the United States that you don't hear about in the U.S. because it's negative. And whereas the U.S. news will print stuff and publish stuff that's negatively impacts the reputation of the British, especially the royal family, that don't get very much play in Britain. So that's the trade-off that you encounter, which is, you know, why it sometimes is very useful to watch international news. You get to learn things about your own country that didn't show up.
Yeah, very good. Okay, enjoy the discussion. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan.
Hey, thank you, Alan. Appreciate it. Listen, I have not opened up the phone lines. That's why the phone's ringing here, John. So
of course.
We got another call here. Ron in Indiana. Come on with Michael and John. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hey, Ron.
Hello.
Hey, gents. Great show. You know, although I didn't hear the beginning, you mentioned some of these political assassinations. And when you mentioned John Kennedy Jr., I remember he was making noise about running for senator of New York, and if that would have happened, I think he would have won hands down, and Hillary wouldn't be in there now, in which case she wouldn't be running for president, most likely. What do you think?
Well, I wanted to talk about that later, but let me quickly throw this thing back into people's minds, and then we'll come back right back to your question.
Can I insert one quick thing?
Yeah, go ahead.
If that would have happened, it would have been a landslide, buddy.
Yeah,
I believe so, too.
That's what the polls showed at the time. They were doing polls in 1999, and in 1999 it showed that if John Kennedy were to have run for Senate, that he would have won by 20 points over anybody, and I don't even think that Hillary was on the list at that time. But I'm trying to get people to focus, and just briefly, how do you get somebody to, what do you tell them to make them think that they would be innocent by turning off a fuel valve and plunging a plane into the water? In fact, John Kennedy, I entertained this notion, and I have looked at probably a dozen interviews with him, and he has always asked that question, and he always gives the same answer, which is a very, very strong and definitive no, and we'll talk about that after the break. I'll give you a lot more detail on that.
Ron, carry, I'll hold you over, Ron, if you've got something else. What part of Indiana are you from, buddy?
That's all.
Where? What part of Indiana are you from, Ron?
Northwest Indiana.
Fort Wayne?
No,
oh, that's
North
Appraisal. Okay, all right, we'll be back in 2 minutes. Michael Herzog, The American Weekend, with my special guest, John Hanke. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it, Ron. Be right back.
It's true.